So Bedding Fuel taking us to 8:30 on a Thursday. A tune called Unwritten. But right now we're talking about something that recently has been written and published. And ahead of a really exciting book launch taking place here in Ballito. Of course, you're tuned in to The Voice of Ballito. It's Radio Life and Style coming to you live from the heart of Ballito on a Thursday morning. With me, Mike, in the morning. And if you are a book lover, a bibliophile, and a lover of local authors and local stories, then this interview is for you. So listen closely, because I have it on good authority that's coming soon, in fact, exactly a week to go, next Thursday, the 29th of August, at the studios in the Lifestyle Center Ballito, at the gallery, a really special local book launch is going to be taking place. And what is the book we're talking about? Well, an autobiography written by well-known and much acclaimed playwright Anthony Ackerman, titled Lucky Bastard, and self-published initially. It's now been gaining some serious attention and is set to be available where all good books are found, the likes of Exclusive Books, Amazon, Takealot, and I'm really excited right now to be connecting with Mr. Ackerman via telephone, because he's based up in Joburg but will soon be here for the book launch on the KZN North Coast. Anthony, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Mike, good morning. Good morning to you and everyone in Ballito. I'm sure you're having some nice warm weather down there.
You know, you'd be surprised. Today it's a little bit grey and miserable, but we had some very toasty weather yesterday, so we can't complain. But definitely warmer than where you're at, I'm sure. Listen, thanks for joining us for a quick little chat on the radio. We're really excited for this special book launch that I've been reading so much about. You've been getting some amazing reviews, literary reviews. I've seen some brilliant stuff in The Witness and Essay Good News. And I want to know, I suppose that's the big question, what motivated you at this stage in life to do a kind of a look back and to put pen to paper and to chronicle your story, your journey?
Yeah, Mike, well, you see, there's a lot of wrangling about people argue it's autobiography or a memoir. So it's actually more of a memoir. An autobiography kind of tells everything, you know. It's a kind of like a much broader spread. This is a story that focuses on my adoption story, on what happened in my life that had to do with adoption, with me having been adopted. I was born in Durban, 75 years ago. I don't know how I got this old, but I was born in Durban in a Salvation Unmarried Mother's home this month, 75 years ago. And it was at a time when you were put up for adoption, you never got to know. It was all secrecy, shrouded in secrecy, and the person who was mostly not allowed to know anything was the adoptee, him or herself. So for the first 38 years about you. So it's quite a shock when you find out that, you know, you're not related, when you get told you're not related to your mum or your dad or your cousins or anybody. And the law is against you. You can't find this information out. As it happened, I was 38 when I found out what the name was that I'd been given when I was born, because you had to be given a name. I hadn't realized that. I hadn't thought of it, actually, that I had a different name. And then at that time, I was living overseas, and I couldn't come back to South Africa, also for political reasons. The government wouldn't let me back. And I managed to trace my birth mother. And so I eventually met my birth mother. So it's the story of tracing my ancestry and everything. And, you know, it was kind of like when you are a writer, you're often looking around for stories to tell. And other writers have said to me, you've got to tell this story. But it's, at times it was too early, you know, and people were kind of worried about their reputations. Now most people who have any cause to be worried about that are no longer with us. And I just thought, it's a hell of a damn story that's landed on my lap, you know, that I met the woman who gave birth to me when I was 40 years old for the first time. And there were lots of twists and turns. And so I wanted to tell the story because it also, in kind of going into the story and digging into it, you know, it's kind of party therapy, but you actually get to understand more about yourself and about the things that you've done wrong, you know, how you messed up in life, and to what extent that might also have to do with the fact that you were a bastard, you know, or you were adopted and were an abandoned child. So, you know, it's also that there are a lot of people who know. I wouldn't be surprised if you know somebody, you've got a cousin, somebody who's adopted, you know. It's quite And nowadays, of course, lots of kids are getting adopted. Yeah. So it's a very relevant story and something that people didn't often want to talk about. It stayed in the kind of area of taboo.
Mm.
So I'm not saying that nothing has been written in South Africa about adoption, but not much. And so that's why I thought it was time to tell the story.
Incredible. And your personal journey, how old were you when you first learned that you were adopted, even though it took many years for you to start putting together the rest of the pieces of the puzzle? But were you still a kid?
Yeah, I was actually, because nowadays, of course, the policy is you tell kids from the moment you've got them, so they never have a red letter day, you know.
Mm.
But my folks were of that generation when you always waited for the right time, you know. But what is the right time?
Yeah.
And and then you delay and you delay and delay, and then suddenly the right time came up when I was 10 years old. And it was quite a shock, you know. It was really, you know, you were old enough to kind of suddenly understand what was going on. It was really quite a shock. I think mainly at the time I was mostly horrified at the fact that you know, that I wasn't as real as my cousins, or I wasn't a real Ackerman, you know. I mean, I was a kind of cast off. I also actually kind of bought into that secrecy. I said, I don't want, don't tell. Does anybody know? Don't tell. And, of course, I'm pretty bad at keeping secrets. So about a year later, I'd start telling people, you know. So, but it was a big shock. It was a change in my life. And that's when, you know, the word bastard, I went to a prep school in Hillcrest, Highbury, which was pretty progressive at the time, and we had like in Standard 4, can you imagine how precocious we were?
Oh, yeah.
Studying Shakespeare's King Lear. And their two sons, Gloucester has two sons, Edgar and Edmund, and the one son, Edmund, is a bastard. They call him a bastard. We thought it was swearing, but we were explained that in Shakespeare's day you could say that word because it meant somebody whose parents weren't married.
Yeah.
And but Shakespeare also had this belief that bastards were inherently evil, and of course, in King Lear, Edmund is a terrible, terrible, horrible murderer, you know. And so, as a 10-year-old kid, you think, "Good God, is this like? Am I cursed? Is this a curse that I have to grow up with?" So, if you've got an overactive imagination like I have, you know, it was quite a shock. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think popular culture, maybe Game of Thrones, has done a bit of a reversal of that portrayal of bastards. You know, Jon Snow, he turned out to be quite a good guy, but that red letter, as you say, it still hangs over things, and it must be an. You know, we tell ourselves all these stories, I suppose. We construct this idea of identity and who we are. And then to one day have something that completely upends this notion of your constructed identity and your heritage and all that, and leaves these huge gaps that you can't fill, these big unknowns, these big questions. That must be something that still to this day is something that you wrestle with. Am I right?
Yeah, well, you see, for a long time, if people would say to me with my surname, they'd say, oh, are you Jewish? No, I'm not Jewish. Are you Afrikaans, or are you this, or are you whatever? Then I'd have to say, look, well, I don't know, but I'm adopted anyway, so I don't know where I come from or what, you know. I have no idea. They say, oh, you could be this, you could be that, you could be this. And it's a conundrum. But if you know that the law is against you and you're never going to find out, there's been this conspiracy of silence, that people have deprived you of that. Well, it's a basic human right, really. Because, you know, otherwise you've just got to get over it and get on with your life. But when they changed the laws, they did in South Africa in the 1980s, it became effective around about 1985 or so, the Child Act.
Mm.
It was mainly because Parliament decided that, you know, hereditary illnesses are a problem. And if you know, that was a justification. If a parent had had an hereditary illness and the adopted child was carrying it and then had children and passed on a disease that could kill the child, it was, you know, the law had to change.
Yeah.
So that made it possible for me to put in a trace. And I was very fortunate because anything could have happened. My mother could have been dead. She could have left the country. She could have, I was reading Blondie, you know, Debbie Harry. She was adopted. She found her mother. Mother wouldn't have anything to do with her. So I was very fortunate that my mother was alive and she wanted contact. And I had fantastic contact with her. And so through her, I got an origin story. I got I found out who my father was. He was a bit of a paternity denialist, but I eventually did get to meet him. I tell well, that story in the book, how that happened and how difficult it was. And then I found out, you know, and you find out these amazing kind of things, Mike. Like, you know, you always, when you're adopted, you kind of think, God, you know, the other play we did was Oedipus Rex, and that's all about incest. So you're terrified as an adoptee that you might meet a girl, fall in love with her, and find out that she's not your mother, but, you know, like an Oedipus, but could be your sister, half-sister, and you've committed incest or something. So kind of thing is, you know, you kind of like constantly checking, could I be related to, you know, where is this other family of mine? Am I walking down West Street in Durban, and is that guy who walked past me, could he be my father, you know, that sort of thing. And then when I did find out who my ancestors were, who my relatives were, I mean, crazy things. I was at varsity with my mother's sister, my aunt, who had gone back to varsity when she was 50 to do a degree. And she sat in the same lecture room as me at Rhodes University for 3 years. I met her all those years later. And I mean, her son, who was my first cousin, was also on the campus. And, you know, he was the kind of poetry editor of the literary magazine. But, you know, he wasn't a friend of mine. He was my first cousin. And his sister was there as well. Imagine if I'd fallen in love with her. You know, so, I mean, you do get these. So I did get the story. So, in fact, because they do say that adoptees, because when you're deprived of an origin story, you become kind of obsessed with genealogy. Mm. I mean, I know quite a lot about my ancestry, probably more than most people bother to know about their ancestry. So I have found out a lot. I have got a lot of answers, yeah. And it was quite an interesting surprise in many ways, because life is full of little ironies. When I grew up in Natal, you know, a little boy in the last outpost, being very anti-Afrikaans. And when I find my ancestry, I find I'm about 70% Afrikaans. So the universe has a sense of irony and humor.
And that irony and humor is definitely woven through your memoir. And I'm just putting up some of the great praise it's received. Justice Edward Cameron's reflection on your memoir, Lucky Bastard, describes it as moving, wry, self-reflective, poignant, insightful, witty, tender anguish, and full of the idiocies of being human. And in a special write-up in The Witness, they said these words capture perfectly the essence of what the arts as a whole offer in a deep exploration of our shared humanity. And this just makes me itch to get a copy in my hands. Luckily, local readers will have a chance to not only grab a copy, but to get to meet and greet you and to hear a little bit more of your tale firsthand when you are in Ballito for this special book launch event next Thursday, this time next week, at the studios in the Lifestyle Center at the Gallery. And really, really excited to have you on our North Coastline and to be giving this story the exposure that is obviously so long overdue after many, many decades and years of searching, and hopefully a story that will resonate and ripple and touch all of those who read it. And as you say, there's so many folk out there who have their own journeys, their own unanswered questions, and in their own way are searching for a sense of identity and an origin story. And I'm sure you've already connected with people who've read it, who've said, this speaks to me very deeply. Am I right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. No, it's, it has. It's, you know, look, I've had wonderful feedback from the book, wonderful feedback, and it's not only from people who are adopted or have anything to do with adoption, but also other people who, you know, didn't think about it very much. It's not only about adoption, but that's kind of like the overarching story in the book. But so it's exciting, and it's now going on the second journey with Praxis Publishing, you know, taking it to the next level. And and I can't wait to be in Ballito next week. It's a spot that I'm very fond of. I often stay there with friends, and my sister used to have an apartment there. So I used to go to Ballito every year. So it's like a home from home. I can't wait to be there next week.
Amazing. We'll be only too happy.
Do come to the studio. The studio also, I have a cousin who has very kindly helped to set up the book launch. That's Sarah O'Reilly. She is an Aikerman as well, so she's my first cousin once removed. And wow. And so, yeah, that's the family connection down there in Belita.
There you go. Still joining the dots. And Anthony Aikerman on the line with me right now, much celebrated playwright and now author of this brilliant memoir, Lucky Bastard. If you're in Belita this time next week, make a date to pop on through to the special book launch at the gallery, at the studios in the Lifestyle Center Belita. We'll be reminding you closer to the time as well. And Anthony, in the meantime, for those who want to get their hands on a copy or two ahead of the launch in Belita, where can we find it?
Well, I'm pretty sure it must be available in exclusive books at Belita. In one of the shopping centres, there is an exclusive book.
Yes.
I mean, people have often said that Belita is actually Samson by the Sea.
I'm glad it's got been upgraded from Boksburg by the Sea.
So it's Samson by the Sea. So I'm absolutely sure it's there. If it's not, I'll make sure that let me know, and I'll make sure that that the books are there today. That they will be, and there will be books on sale through the gallery at the book launch as well.
Brilliant. Well, we're counting the days, counting the hours, and looking forward to having you in Belita next week, Anthony. And thanks for sharing a little bit of your story right here on radio. And can't wait to read the full thing in this awesome memoir, Lucky Bastard. And on the line with the lucky bastard himself, Mr. Aikerman, wishing you a thrilling Thursday, and we'll see you in Belita soon.
Thanks very much, Mike. Great talking to you.
You heard it here on Radio Life and Style, live from the heart of Belita, and bringing you back to the